We're talking about whether there is a federal economic relief package anywhere on the horizon. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President-elect Joe Biden urged Congress this week to immediately pass a $3 trillion stimulus plan as the COVID crisis intensifies across our nation.
We're going into a very dark winter. Things are going to get much tougher before they get easier. And that requires sparing no effort to fight COVID so that we can open our businesses safely, resume our lives, and put this pandemic behind us. It's going to be difficult, but it can be done.
What questions do you have about the stalled stimulus negotiations? Do you agree with the positions of either side? What does our economy need now? We're at 800-642-1234. Catherine Rampell is an opinion columnist at The Washington Post, where she writes about economics, public policy, and politics. Catherine, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Great to be here.
Well, the government has not authorized a large stimulus since the CARES Act passed in March, $2.2 trillion. You know, I heard Oregon Governor Kate Brown last night on NPR saying, look, Democrats need to make some concessions here. Republicans have to pull through and deliver for the American people because a record number of people in the U.S. are hospitalized. States are shutting down. What is going on in Capitol Hill?
That is an excellent question, given that there have been many, many, many months since the last major fiscal action was taken to come to an agreement on an additional one. And since then, of course, the economy has improved, which maybe in some people's eyes suggests that there is less pressure to get something done. But the problem is that that improvement has been slowing down. That we started out in the summer adding a ton of jobs, and then that job growth has continued but has been slowing, has sort of been petering out. A lot of other economic indicators suggest that the recovery is stalling. And meanwhile, our politicians on Capitol Hill do not seem able to come to an agreement on what should be done about any of that. And of course, with infection surging, that increases the risk that the recovery could peter out and the economic need will be even greater.
Yeah, and there are 44 days until the end of the year when some, you know, money then becomes unavailable or money runs out. And so we're looking with our eye to December 31st and saying, then what?
Right. There are certain programs that expire entirely. So listeners may recall that lawmakers had passed three major unemployment insurance expansions. One was increasing the generosity of benefits that by an additional $600 per week. That expired over the summer. There are two other programs, one making people eligible for unemployment benefits for longer periods of time, you know, given how serious this crisis is, and then the other one, expanding eligibility for benefits. So if you're a gig worker, freelancer, contractor, Uber driver, whatever, you can now qualify for benefits. Those two programs will expire around Christmas. Already people are exhausting them if they happen to have been unlucky enough to have gotten laid off from their job very early in the year. But there's going to be a huge wave of people who just stop getting that much needed aid that helps them buy groceries and, you know, pay the rent, pay whatever bills that they have. They're all going to lose their benefits again around Christmas. So there is some urgency here.
Yeah, and it's a fine line here, because what happens to Main Street, to businesses, if Congress stalls on relief funds and small businesses have burned through their savings? How did they make it through?
That's an excellent question. And I think that's the other key constituency here, right? It's households are suffering. They need aid through unemployment insurance, through food assistance, through other things that will help them get by. But so do businesses. We've seen a huge wave of small business closures over the past several months. And there's a question about whether those businesses that have closed will ever be able to reopen. In surveys that have been conducted, you know, or other data sources, like if you Yelp has been putting out data on, you know, what share of businesses that are listed on their platform are open versus closed. And if they're closed, is it temporary versus permanent? those numbers have been quite concerning, suggesting that a lot of firms are going to close permanently, not because, you know, their business models were somehow defective before COVID, not because they were uncompetitive, they weren't productive, they didn't manage well, whatever. The problem is that they can't operate while we have a pandemic, either because you know, there might be some sort of state restrictions on the ability to go to the gym or eat at an indoor restaurant or what have you, or because consumers are just afraid to partake of those activities while the pandemic is still raging. So the real question is, how do we make sure that until we have a broadly available vaccine, that businesses can continue, businesses that are still, that would otherwise be viable businesses, can continue to get by so that they're, you know, ready to go when the economy is prepared for them to do so, right? That that when people are ready to go back to work and ready to go back to the normal economic activities, there will still be jobs there for them and shops for them to go to and other, you know, businesses for them to patronize. And that's really a risk here that, you know, the sort of productive capacity of the economy will be permanently or enduringly, if not permanently, affected by these prolonged closures and fear of engaging in, you know, our normal economic lives.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Catherine Rampell, who's been writing for The Washington Post about the economy and the need for Congress to act on a stimulus bill. She's an opinion writer at The Post. You can join in. What would you like to see in the next relief and economic stimulus bill? What support do you need during the pandemic? What support does your community need and your family need? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Gary joining us from Iron River. Hi, Gary. What's on your mind?
Good morning, ladies. I'd like to understand what the real truth is of this HEROES Act with regard to state and municipal aid. The Republicans have said that it bails out poorly run states with giant deficits in pension funds like New York and Illinois to the detriment of a state like Wisconsin, who has a very well-run and well-funded pension plan. And you never hear, I don't hear a rebuttal to that, but I don't know what the truth is, and would like to understand how the states will be treated and be treated equitably.
Okay, sure. Thanks. Yeah.
Sure. So it is true that a number of states entered this pandemic recession, whatever you want to call it, on poor fiscal footing. But independent of that, the pandemic has wreaked havoc on state and municipal finances pretty much across the board. Red states, blue states, states that had pre-existing pension obligations that were out of whack, and those that didn't. And if you look at the data, I'm going to see if I can pull this up while we're on the show, but in any event, it shows that a number of red states, for example, or purple states, also are facing major budgetary shortfalls in the next year or two, and that's for a couple of reasons. One is that with business closures and people and consumers pulling back from their normal spending, that means there's less tax revenue coming in, whether from income taxes or from sales taxes or other sources of revenue. So there's less money going into state coffers. And then also there's greater demand for public services as well, because people need various kinds of assistance. And, you know, there's been some federal help with that, but arguably not enough. States and localities are, generally speaking, bound by balanced budget rules, often through their constitution. So they cannot borrow to make up that difference. So the proposals that are on the table at the federal level are basically saying, look, the feds can borrow. They may as well help these states make ends meet in the meantime. So it's not just about bailing out, you know, past profligacy. It's about helping them make ends meet now.
And talking with Catherine Rampell of The Washington Post. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we inquire about the status of a new economic stimulus plan on Capitol Hill. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President-elect Joe Biden said Monday it's imperative for lawmakers to pass a COVID relief package during the lame duck session before they adjourn next month. But Politico reports there are no active discussions between Republicans and Democrats on such a plan. They said yesterday the White House is silent, the Hill is quiet, and a number of crucial provisions expire, as we've been talking about, at the end of the year. So how has your work been affected by the lack of federal economic support? Are you a business owner? What can you share about your experience? 800-642-1234 to join in. Catherine Rampell is a Washington Post columnist, and she stays with us. Let's bring in Kyle joining us from Sheboygan. Hi, Kyle.
Hello. I just wanted to comment my opinion. There's three things that the government should do that are not, you know, a handout as far as, you know, giving money, but better testing, more funding for testing and contact tracing, and, you know, widely distributing the vaccines that are coming out and making that available. In my opinion, they're getting this pandemic under control is going to help stimulate our economy. It goes hand in hand, in my opinion. Thank you.
Yeah, Kyle, thank you. So Kyle is saying to get the economy on track, it's more testing, more contact tracing, and making sure vaccines are available widely. Catherine, what do you think of that?
I think that's absolutely right, that in the long run, public health and economic interests are aligned, that we will not get the economy back on a solid footing until the public health crisis is addressed. And that won't happen, of course, until we have a widely available vaccine. In the meantime, there are also other things we can do that are sort of low-hanging, non-costly fruit, right? I mean, we don't have, I feel like this question always gets framed as, well, is there a trade-off between allowing businesses to operate and getting the vaccine under control and maybe in the near term? But there are things like, you know, encouraging or mandating mask wearing that is very cheap. It's annoying. I agree. I don't like wearing a mask. Most people don't. But it's not nearly as costly as having to spend another, you know, few trillion dollars keeping businesses afloat. So there are these kinds of public health interventions short of, you know, the distribution of a vaccine, which will ultimately come and hopefully sooner rather than later that we could be engaging in. And testing and tracing, obviously, that will cost money. That's not free. But probably the return on investment on that is enormous if it means that we can keep infections under control sufficiently so that more economic activity can resume more quickly.
It seems like there's quite a bit of divide here between Democrats wanting a neighborhood $3.4 trillion plan. Republicans have offered $650 billion on the table. What are the sticking points here? You know, why the vast difference in what they want to accomplish in this plan with the dollars they want to spend?
Sure. So it's not just a matter of, well, one side wants this amount of money and one side this wants that amount of money. So why don't we just take, you know, the midpoint between the two and just do that? There are actually differences in composition between the various proposals. So, for example, in the most recent bill that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, had put forward, I believe there was no aid to state and municipal governments, which, as we've been discussing, are really hurting and are on the verge of having even more layoffs than they have, which, you know, would add more pain. So McConnell has since said that he's open to having aid for state and local governments, but it wasn't at least in that most recent bill. There's also a question of, you know, should there be those another round of those $1,200 checks to Americans around the country? They seem to go back and forth on whether they will allow that. I believe the most recent proposal, I think, from Republicans did not have that, but they seem open to it. So there are, you know, core elements that the Democrats have basically said, look, this is really not negotiable. We don't want states and localities to go broke. We don't want first responders to get laid off as a result of that and have, you know, another wave of layoffs just compounding all of the economic pain we've already had. And Republicans have said, well, why don't we just do the things we agree on? And, you know, you can argue it both ways. Maybe they should just come together on the things that they agree on. From the Democrats' perspective, I think they're saying, but then there will never be pressure to get all of this other really critical stuff through. Mm-hmm. So there are major sticking points on substance and negotiation tactics, of course. But either way, I think there really is need for both sides to come to some sort of agreement, because we can't just wait until January when a new administration is in to kind of get these talks restarted.
Yeah. So what is the role here of the incoming administration? Because, you know, we were watching President-elect Biden's speech very closely Monday for any hints of whether he was offering some compromise on that $3 trillion. Didn't hear much there.
I think he's mostly just hoping that they get something done.
Okay.
Was my takeaway from that speech. I believe he had praised the most recent version of the HEROES Act, which was smaller than the original version of the HEROES Act. But I think he's mostly just hoping that something moves between now and January so that the existing economic pain out there doesn't get worse.
If nothing moves mm-hmm. between now and January, what happens to our economy?
I'm very worried about that prospect, especially because infections are rising, have been rising. It's getting colder. That seems correlated with greater transmission of the virus. The vaccine is still a little ways off. So those kinds of factors could definitely weigh on the economy, on again, consumers' willingness to go out and engage in economic activities and businesses' ability to survive and continue having people on their payrolls. So I'm very concerned about that. And then, as we've been talking about, this is really not about necessarily stimulating the economy. It's really more about providing relief so that households and businesses can kind of get by until we have the pandemic really under control through a widely distributed vaccine. So I think there's going to be a lot of suffering in the meantime if, in fact, another round of fiscal relief, you can call it stimulus, but it's really better characterized as just like alleviating the pain. If that doesn't come through, I think you're going to see a lot of suffering, you know, potential waves of evictions, and already the numbers for food insecurity and things like that are distressingly high. So mm-hmm. I think you'll see that continue. You'll probably see some even more permanent business closures.
We're talking with Catherine Rampell, who writes about the economy and public policy for The Washington Post, an opinion columnist there, taking your questions about what you see. What questions do you have about the stalled negotiations in Congress regarding relief? Join in. Do you agree with the positions? What do you want to see come out of it? 800-642-1234. You know, Catherine, states are looking at these mask mandates and other mandates and trying to, figure out how to enforce them, right? And there's been talk about, do you fine people? Do you arrest people for exceeding the social gathering limits? Do you shut businesses down that don't comply? What are you seeing out there in terms of enforcement?
It seems to really vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and I've seen examples where this may even be true in Wisconsin, I'm not sure, where at the state level they've mandated one thing and then the local sheriff has essentially rebelled and said we're not going to enforce that. I think it's really sad at this point that, again, this very easy, relatively non-costly public health intervention has been so politicized. And I don't know exactly the right way to depoliticize it, except to have our leaders of various kinds, whether political or religious or otherwise, just say, hey, guys, you know, this isn't going to end transmission, but it can severely curb it. This is an easy thing we can do, which it shows, respect for your neighbors and family members and colleagues, and it'll help keep you and your own family a little bit safer. So this is better than alternative options that we have. Mm-hmm. And I would really love to see, even short of enforcement, just more leadership on this issue. Because again, it's just not an expensive, it's an inexpensive intervention, and it's something that could really help.
In our last 30 seconds here, what are you watching for out there in DC from your vantage point? What should we be watching for?
That's a good question. You know, I'm looking at how politicians are interpreting the numbers as they come in. Are they celebrating the fact that the economy is still growing, or are they paying attention to the fact that it's growing more slowly, that it's decelerating? I'm paying attention to what kinds of comments are being made about the viability of various fiscal relief programs. You know, how much agreement is there on unemployment benefits? How much agreement is there on schools? You know, getting more aid for schools, which we haven't talked about at all, but is really another thing that we should be prioritizing at the expense of almost everything else. But I'm quite concerned that if they don't act quickly enough, again, that there will be a lot of unnecessary financial pain endured now and a lot of enduring scarring effects for the months and years ahead.
Catherine, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Catherine Rampell is an opinion columnist at The Washington Post. Coming up, the state Supreme Court is hearing a case that challenges the statewide mask mandate. We'll talk about it right after this news update on the Ideas Network.